I guess the best way to describe my mental well-being, especially in the last year and a half, has been like diving into a dish of shishito peppers, right? If you've ever had this, you might know what I'm talking about. Most days I'm fine, and then out of nowhere, my negative voice, my inner critic, and my self-doubt start to get super spicy, which is always fun. In these moments, I freeze and I panic, and I just feel like this is how I'm going to feel forever. My brain completely goes into flight or fight mode, and I'm just searching for the mental equivalent of milk to soothe.
When the pandemic hit, my anxiety skyrocketed. And I know my anxiety is bad when I start ironing out the wrinkles on the comforter when I make my bed in the morning. I usually like to tell myself, if my apartment is immaculate and I get everything done on my to-do list today, then I'm okay.
I started to focus in on my mental wellness after the loss of my twins in a really late-term miscarriage. I needed more support than what I could read and pick up, so I turned to therapy. And I don't know why I didn't turn to therapy earlier in life and why it had to be this trauma to get me to go to therapy. But I've been doing therapy ever since. And now I'm a big advocate for normalizing mental wellness and destigmatizing, you know, the need to seek care.
Does any of this sound familiar? We all deal with mental health in our own ways. And since May is Mental Health Awareness Month, I thought, hey, this is a great time to have an honest conversation about it. At the start of the pandemic, Youth to the People offered BetterHelp, which is online therapy, to all employees. Here's Hesu Jo, a licensed marriage and family therapist who works with BetterHelp and is based out of the Bay Area of California.
You know, mental health is connected to every aspect of who you are. Everything that we do is controlled essentially by our brain. And if our brain is sick, as in it's not doing well mentally, it's not doing well emotionally, I think it's really hard to navigate so many of life's requirements that require a lot of like concentration, focus, stuff that is often the first thing to go when your mental health is being neglected.
And that is what I want to discuss with our guests today.
I'm Elise Cohen, and I'm the Vice President of Social Impact and Inclusion at Rare Beauty by Selena Gomez.
And I'm Tremaine Elamine. I am the Assistant Vice President for Strategic Partnerships at the National Council for Mental Wellbeing, formerly known as the National Council for Behavioral Health.
Elise and Tremaine are doing the work to destigmatize mental health in the workplace, the beauty industry, school, and beyond. Get this, Elise's previous experience includes leading Michelle Obama's Let's Move initiative during her time in the White House, and her career has spanned social impact, public and private partnerships, and developing large-scale campaigns to really move the needle on social issues.
I think a lot of us come to this work from personal experience, family experience, and probably when you're someone like Tremaine or I and you step into a space and you see that there is such a need and such a gap, you're sort of like, what can I do? Can I do something in my profession? Can I do something in my personal life? And so that's where I sort of blended the two and I took my own experiences and felt like I could bring that into working with companies and how they address mental health. And then I'm just incredibly, incredibly fortunate that an opportunity that blended everything, issue I'd worked on for so long, the brand side, and such an authentic celebrity voice on this issue all came together because I feel like that is the perfect recipe for creating change in mental health.
You know, there's a lot of stigma around mental health, and it's so important for us to be able to create change in mental health and well-being. Something beautiful about this is that everyone has the capacity to create change regarding mental health. You don't have to develop large-scale campaigns or work in the White House. It can be as simple as being a supportive, listening ear, connecting a friend with much-needed support and resources, and even doing mental health first aid.
YTTP Studios presents To the People Podcast.
This podcast is powered by Youth to the People. We make pro-grade vegan, cruelty-free skincare for all genders, pronouns, skin tones, passions, and people. And right here, every week, you'll meet friends of the brand who prioritize wellness, however it looks in their lives, and use their practice to learn more about themselves and heal their communities. I'm Greg Gonzalez, co-founder of Youth to the People.
And I'm your host, Alyssa Shapiro. Tremaine, tell me how you and Elise were together and what your background is.
First of all, Elise is the epitome of a connector. I would describe her as probably the most well-resourced individual I know. I have had the privilege to get to know Elise as she's worked with companies and partnered around a number of initiatives that had to do with mental well-being during her tenure at the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. And since then, we've grown to work together on so many opportunities to impact communities. Every day, I get to combine my passion for mental health advocacy and education by serving as the Assistant Vice President for Strategic Partnerships at the National Council for Mental Wellbeing. I am so excited for this conversation because I think it is such a critical conversation to have in every sector and every place across the country. So I also get the privilege of being a member of the Rare Beauty Mental Health Council. And so really excited to work alongside Elise to bring just this message around hope, healing, support for mental well-being to everyone who will listen. So excited to also tell you a little bit about what we do at the National Council. And, you know, one of the things that really struck me as I started in this kind of space was the amount of access to supports and services, and really, it's a staggering statement that nearly 30 million people across the country don't have access to quality care. And I saw that in my own community. Affordable, relevant care for mental health and substance use challenges is really where we focus at National Council. We really focus on promoting mental health recovery from substance use challenges, equitable access to high quality care. And we really are focused on ensuring that mental well-being is a reality for everyone. And so we've been around for 50 years and help to foster connections and community through services and supports, and represent as a membership organization more than 3,500 providers of mental health and substance use treatment, and represent more than 10 million children, adults, and families that they serve. And so really, the thing that I think most individuals across the country are looking for is that connectivity, that support, and that access to treatment and care. And mental health first aid is our public education program that teaches how to recognize the signs and symptoms to get people connected to that care. And we've trained about 2.5 million people nationally to do so over the last several years.
What is mental health? What is mental well-being? And how do we measure that for ourselves? Like, what are we talking about when we're talking about mental health?
You know, it really includes our emotional and psychological and social well-being. And, you know, I think there's lots of conversations going around right now about, you know, do we call mental health what it is? Do we call it something else? And, you know, I feel like, yes, we call it what it is. We call physical health what it is. We should be calling mental health what it is. And it's also really about how our mind and body respond to different stresses and triggers in our environment. And for some people, you know, there's an added level of actual imbalance that they experience, and others there isn't. But it's really how we navigate and how we feel on an emotional and social and psychological level.
So a lot of times you talk about mental health and substance use and separate them, right? I think National Council's approach is really to talk about making mental well-being include recovery from substance use challenges and include that opportunity for it to be a reality for everyone everywhere, right? And so for me, it really is about ensuring that we're not leaving pieces of the conversation on the table. You know, we're driving social change, we're driving policy change, all with a lens on making sure that we promote greater understanding of mental well-being as a core component of comprehensive health and healthcare.
So I want to talk about how we experience mental health, like what that means for us in our daily lives, whether we are dealing with illnesses or whether we're talking about like well-being and just, you know, being well mentally. What does that look like? Because I think in the last year, we've seen, or 14 or 15 or however many months it is at this point of the pandemic, we've seen a lot that has changed us. And certain groups of people have experienced like higher levels of daily trauma, whether it's frontline workers putting their health at risk, teachers and parents who are figuring out how the heck to do distance learning and to remain connected, and for kids who are used to seeing their friends in school to remain connected, and for office workers to remain connected. I mean, we're all dealing with a lot that's impacting our anxiety and all these other things. So how is it that we experience mental health? What does that look like for all of us?
I love this question because there's such an opportunity for us to rethink what it really means to attend to our well-being. We've had a shared experience. I've heard it said that we have all gone through the same storm, but in different boats. And so that shared experience means something different, whether someone's balancing teaching their young person at home at the same time that they're trying to work from home, whether that's battling financial challenges as a result of unemployment, whether that is dealing with social injustice, racial inequity, so many other impacts to your mental well-being on a regular basis, in addition to the things that the COVID-19 pandemic has brought. There's so many opportunities for us to think about that shared experience and what we might be able to do to really attend to being good to ourselves, being patient with others, and allowing ourselves to share space and community in a way that gives us an opportunity to deal with our mental health. And at least acknowledge how we're feeling. I think that's where it really starts, is an acknowledgement that, hey, I'm not okay. And then that conversation about what can I do to actually address that? And that could be something different for everyone.
That would be my next question then. Like, what are some ways that you would encourage people to figure out what that looks like for them? Whether it's, I mean, for me, and I've talked about this in past episodes, it's like being in nature, like put me in front of a tree for a couple hours and like I will self-heal a little bit. But what does that, that's not always, you know, easy access. So what are other ways that people can access mental care and mental well-being in a way that works for them?
Absolutely. I'll start this off by saying that there's a tremendous amount of resources and awesome organizations that really focus on identifying and being able to provide access to services, supports at whatever level someone might want. One of the things we teach in mental health first aid is to ensure that whatever you suggest to someone, that it resonates with them. And so just like you said, Alyssa, there's this opportunity to think about, do trees really resonate with the person who I'm suggesting go out into nature? Is this a city person who's gonna be like, are you serious? Or is this a crisis situation? And so it's a lot more serious than a self-care practice, right? And so sometimes knowing exactly what you're dealing with. We teach a 5-step mnemonic to assess first and actually approach someone, then listen to them, then give them reassurance and information, and then encourage help in either a professional standpoint or maybe self-care and other support strategies. And so that process helps us know what to do when. And then there's also all kinds of apps, all kinds of lists of things that people might try, people to follow on social media. What I love about Rare Beauty is there's always opportunity and content that really helps us focus on what we can do to attend to ourselves in the moment. And there's opportunity to get good information because there's tons of information out there, but we want to make sure that the information that we're sharing is safe, supportive, and resonant with the individual that we're suggesting it to.
You mentioned a 5-step or 5-word check-in to assess the situation. Can you explain what that is?
Yeah, absolutely. So mental health first aid is a program that really teaches someone to recognize the signs and symptoms of an emerging mental health or substance use challenge. And we say challenge because we don't teach people how to diagnose someone and say, oh, well, it looks like to me like you have depression, or it looks to me like you are experiencing OCD. It really isn't about that. It's about understanding, I see something, I'm going to say something, and I'm going to feel comfortable that whatever the person's response is, I will be able to handle it and either deal with it in the moment if it's a non-crisis situation, or if it's a crisis, I'll be able to connect that person to the appropriate level of resource in my community, in my workplace, or in my family. And so how we go about that process is this five-step process. It's called ALGI. Now, it sounds like pond scum. It's not. It's an acronym, just like if you took first aid or CPR, you would learn to take the steps like the ABCs, right? Take those steps to know what to do when, what to do next, and how to support someone in getting connected to care and services and supports, and to know what those resources are. Now, that process, it could be a little scary. It could be a little challenging to really approach someone in a way, especially when we don't know what is at the end of, are you okay? It could be no. And so a lot of times we don't have that conversation. And so what the program's designed to do is just help you be comfortable with that conversation and give you those tools about what to do next and make it not such a scary conversation to have.
So is the first question of ALGI, are you okay?
So the first question around ALGI could be, are you okay? It really is to assess for risk of suicide or self-harm and just assess and approach the situation from a place of support, from a place of comfort, and to understand what you're looking at. Each of us has to ask a question, whether that question be, are you considering suicide or are you doing okay? It just depends on the circumstance. And that's what the first letter really teaches you and reminds you to do. It's a nonlinear process, so it doesn't have to be done in order, but that's where we always come back to. What is that thing that we need to say, do, or respond to?
So what comes next after you assess the situation and understand kind of how you could direct things next, how you could help someone next?
Absolutely. So the L is really about listening, right? We all think we're great listeners. I know I did for a while. And then I had other people tell me otherwise. So life tells you like you're good. You think you're good, but you're always listening to respond. And so how do we adjust that and make sure we're listening to really hear a person out, understand where they're coming from, and be clear on how we might support them and have it resonate with them? I've said that a couple of times because, a lot of times we think we're hearing what someone says, and until we repeat it back, until we demonstrate with our body language that they're being heard, they really may not be. You might be waiting for an opportunity to jump in with your suggestion to fix what's happening. And a lot of times that's because we're uncomfortable with the conversation and we want to fix the situation someone might be in. And so it really is about being non-judgmental about the situation, whether we think it's something that they should be see as very easy to go through from our perspective, or we honor that purpose, that person's experience. So it's really about honoring the person's experience and suspending judgment so we can support them in ways that resonate.
That's such a beautiful lesson, I think, for anyone to be able to repeat back what someone has told you so that they know that you heard and understand them, and so that you make sure that you understood what they were trying to say too. I think that's such a great life lesson for anything in any situation.
Absolutely.
I was just going to say, like, something that I love about that piece of the program is, like, we're trying to shift the culture and the conversation, the way people connect with people. And if you think about it, if you just go about your day for the next few days and you see how many times someone says, hi, how are you? But they don't actually expect that someone's going to really tell them how they are. They assume someone's going to say, hi, I'm good. How are you? And that's it. Right. And we are so wired to feel that way. And it's almost like an automatic behavior. And we have to change the way we listen and connect to people. We have to ask these questions and welcome the chance to actually hear how someone is doing, or else no one's ever going to really truly share that. And I just have, I have felt it in my own where someone's asked me and they're not actually listening to anything I have to say anyway, which ends up being even harder, especially when you are in a hard place and you are in a moment where you are sharing, but nobody's listening. And I know that I am guilty of doing that too, where, you know, I'm sort of just bumped into someone, hey, how are you? And that's it. Like, I am not looking to hear your 7-minute story. I just keep going, which is not the right approach.
Oh, but that's such a good point that it's like, it saying how are you is almost like part of the greeting. Like, it's not a question anymore. So to take the time and actually, I mean, maybe what we need to do is rephrase it. Are you doing okay? Like, just to shift our brain structure around like how we're asking the question, so we actually stop and listen and can be there and be present in that conversation. That's such a good point. I do it all the time too.
Yeah, it's like, before you ask that question, make sure you have the time for whatever comes after. Whatever comes, hold space for that person and be willing to be there, or tag somebody else in the ring, right? Making sure that, you know what? I'm on my way to a meeting. This sounds really distressing to you, and I want to make time. So I want to come back to this. But I think in this moment, are you okay if we bring in so-and-so to this conversation? Especially if it's something, I know for workplaces, as I've worked with so many companies who are really starting this conversation around mental health in a way that before it was a uphill struggle to get buy-in from leadership. I think that narrative has shifted significantly over the last 14 months, that the needs were always there, but the willingness to have the conversation has completely changed. And so I think that this skill, this ability, and really these are real concrete skills-based tools from a leadership, from a management perspective, that are really helpful in ensuring that individuals are supported or feel supported within the workplace specifically.
That's a really interesting point, that it took buy-in from leadership and it might have taken this last year to get there. And I wonder if it's because, like, collectively as a society, we are just experiencing higher levels of stress, even like frequent trauma, you know, not just with the pandemic, but also with like climate change and increased natural disasters. And I mean, we really have to have a society open to mental wellness to accommodate for what's going on in all of our lives.
Absolutely. And I think what's been interesting in the last 14 months is, and Tremaine alluded to this, and so much of what I worked with Tremaine on previously and what I've been so excited to bring to Rare Beauty is expanding mental health first aid at work to more workplaces, because it is about leadership and culture. The same way we train around communication strategies and how to communicate in a workplace. And in these past 14 months, while, as Tremaine mentioned, like, these problems have always existed, but now we're seeing that no one's unaffected. So you have folks in leadership positions that are home with their 3 kids and a wife, or they're a single parent, or God forbid someone's ill. And so no matter what, someone's life and routine changed in these past 14 months. And no matter what, that change impacts someone's mental health. And so it allows people who otherwise felt either untouched or unable to speak vulnerably in their workplace to sort of actually lead with vulnerability. And that's where that culture change happens. And, you know, Tremaine and I work on this day in and day out. So we've probably seen every other day multiple headlines, but I bet if folks did research on how much mental health and mental health in the workplace specifically hit headlines in these past 14 months compared to the previous decade, we'd be blown away, because it is the topic of conversation, both in the workplace and just in society.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it used to be taboo to talk about, and that placed a stigma on experiencing mental illness. And that's something that I love about NAMI and about Rare Impact and about what Youth to the People has signed on to, is like creating a stigma-free workplace to be able to have these conversations and make sure that people don't feel ashamed of what they're experiencing or ashamed if they need a mental health day or if they need to step outside for a minute or if they need to, you know, I need to go on a walk instead of joining this meeting. Otherwise, it's not going to be great for me or for anyone else. So I love that, like, that openness and that removal of stigma. So I love RARE's approach, which is like positioning mental health as something that should be prioritized in school, like the same way that classes like PE and science and history are taught. Like it's this like knowledge of self and this like self-understanding that I think we should be moving toward as a society, like getting there where everyone has access to that and has resources to help further themselves along that journey. Can you talk about how that came to be part of RARE Beauty's and RARE Impact's approach?
For us, addressing mental health and self-acceptance has always been at the center and the core of our business. Selena Gomez, our founder, knew from day one she wanted to make sure that this focus was part of her brand, that it was really more than a beauty brand and something that was incredibly authentic to her. Everything from her life growing up in a makeup chair to her own diagnosis with bipolar disorder a couple of years ago. And what's been interesting is we've taken this issue and by putting it sort of at the center of the business, it's really embedded in everything we do, from educating our own community. We partner with mental health experts like Tremaine, who's on our RARE Beauty Mental Health Council, and nonprofit organizations like the National Alliance for Mental Illness and many others to take that content and put it into digestible resources for our community, which is primarily Gen Z. And we know that educating and sort of that storytelling piece is one of the biggest ways that we can change stigma and shift the culture. And what happened early on was we started to see that the content we were sharing on mental health was really, really resonating. Some of this content was our most saved content, the comments we were getting, the feedback. We saw that we were uniquely positioned to create this educational platform. And so what we did was we thought about that and we thought about our own audience and leaning into them. And we thought about Selena's authentic story. She's told me many times how she has felt that, you know, if only she learned and understood emotions and mental health early on, her own journey would have been different. And she knows that there's so many other people out there that her own story resonates with. And so we had this aha moment, you know, we're educating our community. They want this. You know, young people and Gen Z, we're all spending the majority of our time in school in these primary years, in college and university. And we're learning about diabetes. We're learning about sexual health, but we're not learning about mental health. And yet statistically, 1 in 5 of us are impacted. And so mental health impacts more people than so many other health conditions. Why aren't we learning about this? And so that's how the idea came to be. We also, of course, have been doing a ton of research on sort of where are the gaps. And the gaps are really, we're not teaching about mental health in school, and we're not bringing mental health services, trained educators, crisis prevention counselors into schools for treatment, intervention, crisis response. So we were sort of like, we want to touch every level of that, from educating to that crisis moment. And that's where our Mental Health Awareness Month campaign came in, which is Mental Health 101. And it really focuses on two main things. The first is Selena created a petition, a change.org petition, which folks can sign. It's change.org/mentalhealth101, where we're leaning on young people to sign this petition to really raise their voice to the philanthropy community on, we need resources, we need more funding to provide services for education in schools. And then we had launched the RARE Impact Fund last July, which is RARE Beauty's commitment to really bridging access to care, to make care for mental health easier for young people. And RARE Beauty contributes 1% of all of our sales to that fund, but we also raise money with partners, with foundations, with individuals, with our community, to help. And so right now we're running a GoFundMe campaign, and that's gofundme.com/rareimpactfund, where we're raising money for the Rare Impact Fund. And we will in the coming months announce an additional 5 organizations in the space of education and mental health to help bring these resources into schools. So that's what we're also raising money for, which is part of our campaign. And then of course, we're encouraging our community to share the creative assets that we've developed around this issue.
That's amazing. I love that. I'm so excited for what is it, Gen Alpha? Is that what's next here? To grow up with these resources in school and to see how that impacts them. I mean, I think that's so cool.
I mean, I get lost at night. I'm such a dork. I get lost on the comments either on our Instagram feed or on the change.org petition, the GoFundMe page. The comments are, they just are super validating for us. When we launched the campaign, Selena, she posted a really personal, authentic, raw, and heartfelt note on her Instagram about her own journey and why this is so important. And the way that that story resonated and the way that this campaign has resonated has just been so validating. And for me, I follow the comments and we try to figure out, okay, or is this enough work and who's doing this and who's doing that and how do we expand and how do we make sure everything gets everywhere? One of the big challenges in mental health is that the system is a little bit flawed and in particular, it is hard to have access to care. And so even where there are programs in schools, those tend to be more affluent neighborhoods. And we want to make sure that we can provide the same sort of resources and education in underserved communities.
You're listening to the People Podcast. We'll be right back. Okay, what do you know about adaptogens? They're actually super effective against stress. Adaptogens are herbs, mushrooms, and plants with a very significant antioxidant profile, and they thrive in areas with extreme changes in the environment, so their biologies allow them to adapt naturally to these harsh environments. They are nature's shield against stress. You'll find in Youth to the People's adaptogen blend ashwagandha, rhodiola, and reishi. Ashwagandha is a powerful antioxidant that prevents oxidative stress and cell breakdown and fends off external stressors, pollutants, and irritants. Rhodiola protects skin before and after environmental stress. It actually gets you ready to take it on better. And reishi, well, did you know that to be fully protected, skin needs to stay hydrated? Reishi offers sustained hydration, and its antioxidants aid in the regulation of our natural moisturizing factors, like hyaluronic acid and ceramide synthesis, which helps skin to be more tolerant to environmental stressors. And you can find these 3 in Youth to the People's adaptogen blend. You can use the code TOTHEPEOPLE15 at checkout at youthtothepeople.com to get 15% off of your skincare purchase. And I recommend highly the Adaptogen Deep Moisture Cream and the Adaptogen Soothe and Hydrate Activated Mist. Get them at youthtothepeople.com. You brought up something, Elise, earlier. You said that the information that you were sharing really resonated with your community, and that's how you knew that this was something that made sense for Rare Beauty and Rare Impact to dive into. And I think about that all the time with Youth to the People in our community and what resonates with them. And really, I know it's social media, but man, is it a community. The way that people come together and support one another and create change through advocacy, awareness, through pushing for funding, through pushing to call your governor to do this. I mean, whatever it is, there's so much that happens and so much beauty in that community that I think is so cool. And I just wanted to talk about this idea. I mean, the importance and the role of community in combating loneliness, which is, I think, something that we're dealing with so much this year, just collectively being separated from each other. But I also don't think it's a last year alone issue. I mean, loneliness is something that impacts all of our mental health. Have you found that the connection that people have through the community that of Rare Beauty has bolstered anyone or made anyone form these connections that have helped them or anything like that?
in such a way. That question, honestly, that question gives me the goosebumps because community is the heart and soul of our brand. And addressing chronic loneliness was really one of our pillars before social isolation was this word, because there is data out there that shows that Gen Z is, in fact, the loneliest generation. And so that did drive a lot of our approach. And what we do is we actually, part of what we do is each week we host a rare chat, which is essentially, it's bringing members of our community together in a conversation on Zoom. And the conversation ranges from, you know, what are you binge watching on TV to what are you struggling with? And we take that community and then we create an online community for them where they're in constant communication. And just last week, we celebrated the 1 year anniversary of Rare Chats. And so we hosted a Rare Chat reunion where we were so, so lucky to have Tremaine join as one of the speakers. And so she was just front and center in seeing the chat, the conversation in the chat, where the community will say, like, I was having such a rough week, a rough year. This community has saved me. And we hear that from so many people. I feel such a responsibility because we want to make sure that we're there for one another. We feel like the combination of our brand and the way, you know, people are turning to the brands that they feel like align with their values, and the celebrities that they work up, that they look up to, that's where young people are turning. That's where all of us are turning for information and for advocacy, really for everything. And so it's where we feel uniquely positioned. It's where we feel responsibility. And so we are constantly refining what's the newest way to create an online community. And so we've been testing out a lot of new things behind the scenes because we see how important this community is and what it's been providing to everyone in this past year and the type of connection and friendships really that have been made. I mean, they'll chat and they know everyone knows each other by name. And of course I'm biased, but Tremaine can attest to this from joining last week. And it was just like the whole time I was like, we have to save the chat feature. We have to save the conversation on the side. They're celebrating each other's birthdays and milestones.
Yeah, Tremaine, what was that like for you being part of it?
You know what? One of the things that I think is so unique about this time in history is what we thought was true as it relates to connectivity, as it relates to what the power of community is shifting. It's changing. And I think for me, the opportunity to see that shift and be a part of that shift in terms of how we look at connection, how we look at what's important, is just mind-boggling to me to see. You know, I am of the age right now where I can remember a time that being online, being engaged was not an option to have that kind of community, and thought at one point that you can't create that kind of space. It's just not the same as being in person. And I think what our experience and shared experiences over the last 14 months have taught us is that there is this not only need for the connectivity that Rare Beauty is creating, but also there's the opportunity to rethink how we define what community is. We are at a time where we can reach out and connect with someone and have it resonate with them in a way that is not a replacement for that in-person connection, but in those rare chats, what we see is the humanity being shared, the shared experiences being talked about. And what I saw was that compounding effect of, oh, and me too. You know, oh, and I saw that too, and I feel that way too. And yes, I'm a little anxious about this too. And so not feeling alone, not feeling like I'm the only one. And then that giving voice and the opportunity to amplify the voice where more and more people have that shared experience is something that I think is completely transforming how we think about community, and an opportunity, I think, for brands, for organizations, even, you know, in our workplaces, to rethink how we interact with one another and what tools we're using to do that. I think in a lot of ways, with all the terribleness, the loss, the grief, the things that have happened over the last several months, there's also that hope and that opportunity that exists by feeling connected to at least one other person. And we know that statistically and based on research, that connection, especially for young people, can be the critical difference.
Yeah, community is everything. Connection is everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I will say that at National Council, one of the things we also did over the last year was pivot our content to not be just the in-person experience, but also a virtual one. And we expanded by adding the Teen Mental Health First Aid Program, which is a peer-to-peer program for young people to have this conversation, and had to make that virtual as well. And so what we're seeing is that it's just this tremendous wave of engagement from young people who are saying, you know what, I'm concerned about my friend, and I can say that virtually and still connect the dots between what I would have seen in person and what I would have seen virtually, and make sure that that young person is at least being outreached to by a caring adult. And so excited about the future of continued connection. And I'm hoping that's something we don't lose as we get further and further away from the shared trauma, really, around the pandemic and other occurrences that are happening and have happened over the last several months.
Yeah, absolutely. And you brought it back to something I wanted to make sure we covered anyway, which was, I think we got to assess and listen, but what's the rest of mental health first aid? Like, what
absolutely
else?
Yeah, definitely. I'm like so excited that I get to even talk about these other three steps, because I think sometimes this is where we get a little advice oriented when it comes to supporting someone else. We kind of put ourselves in there a lot of times because it's our experience and we want to have it resonate. And so the G in ALG is really about giving reassuring information and not saying that everything is going to be okay, because we don't know, right? We don't know what tomorrow holds, but we know that we can hold space for that person today. We know we can stay with them as they identify what might work for them for a next step for support. And if it's a crisis situation, we know we have some resources that we can reach out to, whether that's the Suicide Prevention Lifeline, which is 800-273-TALK, or whether it's the crisis text line, which is 741-741, or if it's just reaching out to a faith leader, a family member, a friend, how can we encourage that hope and know that there's resources available and information that can connect the dots between hope and facts. And so that's what that's about. And then the last two E's, I love encouraging support. And I think that's great. I think that that's the epitome of what we want to do with mental health first aid. But we do it in two ways. One is around professional help, and one is around self-help and support strategies. And so it really is about how can we connect the dots between someone, letting them know that professional help is available, whether that's a therapist or a physician or someone in a position where they've gotten the training to be able to identify exactly what's going on with the person, as opposed to a first aider, because we stay in our lane just to be the bridge to help, as opposed to attempting to resolve the situation itself. And then that last E is really about self-help. And self-help not only for the person who's receiving support, but also for the first aider themselves. And first aiders are the individuals who take the course. They get a certification for 3 years, just like they would for CPR first aid. We know that when we support others, we need to also support ourselves, because we don't want to pour out of an empty cup, but we typically do. We typically give from the reserves and then are depleted, right? And so it's important for us to take care of ourselves and our own wellness as we support others. And so that ALG mnemonic stands for assess for risk of suicide or harm, listen non-judgmentally, give reassurance and information, encourage encourage professional help and encourage self-help and other support strategies. And that professional help, we're talking about encourage the appropriate level of professional help, depending on the situation, and always coming back to that A of assessing what we're seeing, what we're hearing, and how we approach a person to support them.
That is so helpful. And I really love what you said about staying in your lane. Like, it's not your role to fix someone else. It's you're there to provide support so that they can and help encourage them onto, you know, the right path for them. And I think that's a really important thing to keep in mind. Like you said, also with like, you can't pour from an empty cup. There's only so much that you can do for someone else. Like a professional really might need to do it, or they might need something other than you, but you can still be there in a way that is helpful.
Absolutely.
I think that's so great. Okay, Algie, how can people sign up to be first aiders?
The way that people can connect and become first aiders to support themselves, to support their communities, support their families or workplaces is to visit mhfa.org and sign up for a local class near them. They could just type in that zip code, identify one of our 20,000 instructors nationally, and join the family of 2.5 million people who know how to recognize those warning signs and know how to connect the dots to care.
And if I may chime in here, since I have participated in many mental health first aid classes, what's really cool is that there are different ones for different audiences. So there's one that is specific for the workplace, that's mental health first aid at work, which is geared toward a business environment. And that's what's really great is that you can bring it into your workplace. And then of course there's one for teens and one for community. I participated in mental health first aid at work in my previous job. And then we actually had the full Rare Beauty team go through mental health first aid at work early in 2021 as well. And that was my first time taking the virtual class.
I need to sign up. I think that's what I'm going to do right after we get off this call.
I think we can make that happen, Alyssa. Absolutely.
I would love it. Tremaine and Elise, thank you so, so much for being here. I'm really honored that we get to continue this conversation here and to be a part of having signed the pledge alongside Rare Beauty for NAMI Stigma Free, and to just work in a workplace that is stigma free and that promotes like awareness of mental health and promotes mental well-being. And I'm happy to be in that company. And I'm just so grateful to talk to you both. So thank you so much for being with me today. And I hope that we'll get to meet IRL one of these days.
Thanks for having us.
Yes. Thank you so much, Alyssa. This has been wonderful. And we are definitely going to get you signed up for that MHFA class.
To the People podcast is a production of YTTP Studios. Find us online at youththethepeople.com and get 15% off your next purchase when you use the code TOTHEPEOPLE15 at checkout. For more on Rare Beauty, check them out at rarebeauty.com. This episode was produced by Mena Zell and myself. It was edited by Mena, and our theme music is by YTTP co-founder Greg Gonzalez and Hannah Fernando. Thank you to Jamie Samfantabansuk, Jesse Giamalva, and Brett Marlowe for their contributions to the top of the episode. I'm Alyssa Shapiro. This is To The People Podcast, and we'll talk soon.